A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on SIM. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 43. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are talking about A for Andromeda. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
A mysterious signal is received from a distant galaxy, and scientists examine it and find instructions to build a supercomputer. Why do they get this? And why is it telling them to build the supercomputer? What will it do? And these themes are part of A for Andromeda, which was a 7-part black and white serial from 1961.
And as you can probably tell straight away, this is what we would call quite hard science fiction, in that it has very serious science fiction concepts, such as very powerful supercomputers and radio telescopes scanning distant galaxies, and even the message itself and its complex instructions to build computers and what that will lead to. So it's quite serious stuff. There's not really any sort of fantasy elements in this. It's all quite hard science and all fascinating stuff, as we'll discuss as we go along. And as you say, 7 episodes, sadly. Only one of the episodes survives in its complete form. We just have other bits and pieces of clips.
We don't even have the audio of all of the missing episodes. We only have parts of the audio.
That's right, yes.
And there was, in fact, a sequel to A for Andromeda that was made a year later in 1962. That was the Andromeda Breakthrough. And that was also 7 episodes. And that survives in its complete form.
The setup of the story of A from Andromeda, as you say, Brian, released in 1961, but set in 1970. So again, we have this sort of British TV idea that we've come across before, the setting things 10 years in the distant future, and that becomes sort of an impossibly sophisticated and computerized society in a way. And we have a group of scientists working on and building a new radio telescope, and they're going to be using this to examine distant stars and galaxies. And also, I think they have some ideas about more, slightly more prosaic, closer to home uses, which I think the military are interested in. At the start of the story, we have them building this radio telescope and getting it working.
Yes, and the tension between military uses and academic research uses of this type of technology is something that is definitely a strong part of A for Andromeda. So the scientists pick up this signal that they realize is artificial. So they realize there is some kind of intelligence in another galaxy, the Andromeda galaxy, of course. They examine this message and find that it is essentially a series of instructions. It is a sort of self-explaining set of instructions that leads them to construct a computer, a supercomputer more powerful than anything else they have. And in fact, it also sends, in effect, the software for this computer. So they are not only building a computer, but giving it these alien instructions so the computer will start to do something.
And what it will do, we'll find out as we'll go along. But obviously, as you can tell, nothing's going to happen until the scientists actually start work on this supercomputer. And so very closely monitored by the government and in particular by the military, they start to actually put this project into effect and take these instructions that they received and start to build this sort of impossibly powerful computer that's a military base somewhere in England.
The idea of the scientific process and working with instructions and the scientific method and doing these types of things is quite central to A for Andromeda. I should also at this point, and we don't usually mention it explicitly, I should give you a spoiler warning at this point, because we will fairly soon start talking about some things that do spoil parts of A for Andromeda. So if you have not seen it and you're interested in seeing it, you can choose if you want partial spoilers that we'll be giving out, or if you want to watch the show first and then listen to what we have to say.
It's an interesting show about ideas and about science, and it is actually, as Brian says, it's quite difficult to discuss this without getting into some of the plot details as we go along.
More so than almost everything else we've covered, actually.
Yeah.
So looking at the characters in A for Andromeda, John Fleming, played by Peter Halliday, was the main scientist, who was very driven as a scientist and very intelligent, and essentially was the person who decoded the message and figured out how to build this computer and run the instructions for the computer. He also has real concerns about how it should be used, and his morals and ideals are very important to him, and he speaks his mind. And this becomes a big part of things as you get to the idea of, well, we have this computer, we have things being built. Who is it working for? Is it doing work for us, or is it doing work for whatever intelligence sent us this message? The character of John Fleming, Dr. Fleming, is key to exposing a lot of these things. There was a second scientist who worked directly with Dr. Fleming, and that was Dennis Bridger, played by Frank Windsor. And he was both a colleague and a friend to John Fleming, but as it proceeds, we find he has links to other organizations. There is a company or conglomerate called Intel that is like a European intelligence group that is essentially a rival to the UK in terms of technology and intelligence and so on. So Bridger's connection to Intel as a sort of spy for Intel almost is something that is also key to the story.
And then we have two other scientists who are also key to the story and to the project. We have a chap called Professor Reinhardt, who's played by an actor called Esmond Knight. And Reinhardt really is the sort of leader of the project. He's the very senior scientist who sort of oversees the work of these two young keen scientists, Fleming and Bridger. And Reinhardt is the chap who has to liaise with the government and the military and act as a sort of buffer between the idealistic keen young scientists and the sort of the slightly more complex wishes of the government and of the military about this project as it unfolds. And then we get another scientist who's brought into the project, Madeline Dorney, played by Mary Morris, who was a rather interesting actress from the sort of 50s and 60s, and she'll turn up later on in British Invaders when we discuss a series called The Prisoner, because she played very memorably one of the versions of the number two character. And the Madeline Dorney character is a biologist, and she's brought on board because the supercomputer, when it's built, starts to churn out another set of instructions, and these set of instructions appear to be almost a template for a new life form, some form of biological creature. And so Dorney is brought in to, in effect, put the second set of instructions into operation and work on the second phase of the project.
We also have Christine, who is a young computer operator played by Julie Christie. Julie Christie, of course, went on to be very well known in the 60s for Dr. Zhivago and much later for things like the Harry Potter series and other things. And this was one of her very first television roles. So Christine was this young computer operator, and at a certain point, she's actually killed. She's electrocuted by the computer, and she becomes the template for Andromeda. So Julie Christie also plays Andromeda, which is a life form, a young woman created by the supercomputer and also by Madeline Dorney, who is working with the computer to do these various things. So as you can gather, the process of what they're doing with this computer is quite key to this story. What it starts with is the computer, once it's up and running, is asking biological questions. So they bring in Dorney, and the computer starts asking, well, what are the basic building blocks of life on this planet? How does this work? How does that work? And asks questions which she answers and leads Dorney through a series of experiments, gradually building up some of the basics of life, basically constructed just from chemicals.
That's right, yes. I mean, as we've said, we're giving away some of the project because they build a supercomputer, and then the supercomputer starts communicating with Dorney. And as you say, it leads her through a series of experiments which produce basically, which produces DNA, and they actually, you know, they actually become quite excited when the computer produces DNA, and then it goes on to create a rather strange amorphous life form with a single large eye, which the team nicknamed Cyclops.
It's like a weird blob. It was quite odd.
Yes, the blob with one eye.
Yeah.
And then once then there's been the incident or the accident when the young computer operator, Christine, has been electrocuted and the computer uses her as a template to create new life and goes on to produce this remarkable young woman called Andromeda.
What we get into at that point is something that becomes almost more political, where we don't know what Andromeda's intentions are. We don't know what the intentions of the computer are. We don't know what the intentions of the alien intelligence that sent the message are. So we have this complex thing where Andromeda becomes the one who works directly with the computer, and we don't always know what Andromeda and the computer are doing and why.
How many times have I got to tell you this machine is ruthless, completely ruthless?
So you decide to throw it off balance. You decide. You don't consult anyone. You're too clever. So clever, the machine goes wrong and damn near kills the girl.
It wasn't because of that.
You've got all the answers, haven't you? After a whole chapter of accidents, you still come up with it's everyone's fault bar yours.
But you don't even want to listen to what happened.
I know what happened.
Were you there? She knew she
and it is quite, I mean, that part is quite complex and confusing, as you say, because most of the team are cracking on with the how of how they can do this and how the supercomputer can do this. And it's, in a way, it's left to Fleming, this young scientist with his concerns and his ideals. It's left to him, in a way, to say, well, actually, never mind how, why are we doing this and why is the computer doing this and whose side is Andromeda on? And as you say, she becomes a sort of direct link with the computer. She's almost a living computer in herself. The intentions of this alien intelligence, quite difficult to fathom, may not be entirely straightforward.
The government and the military are looking at this and saying Andromeda and the computer together are very powerful. They can do all kinds of things. They can build us a new defense system. There are all kinds of things they can come up with. For them, especially for the military, it becomes an ends justifying the means type of thing. It doesn't matter as much that they're taking advantage of this uncertain alien resource as much as it matters that they can do things that will make them more powerful than their enemies.
And it we've seen this theme on British Invaders before, that there's, you know, there's almost this Cold War paranoia. Here we are right at the very start, or before the Cold War, really. And we have this reflected in Andromeda, with, as you say, the British military thinking, well, here's something we can use to help us defeat our enemies. And there's all sorts of projects being discussed. I mean, even a sort of very early sort of missile defense system or a Star Wars type system where the British military want to use the Andromeda system to intercept missiles flying through British airspace. So there's lots of interesting stuff. And there's also the government is interested in the idea of sort of industrial spin-offs of the Andromeda process and all sorts of side projects which they think will have, I suppose, commercial impact as well.
Yes, and there's also this idea of a healing enzyme, which was at a point when Andromeda is injured, the computer and Andromeda manage to generate this enzyme that can heal her almost instantly and can heal anyone else as well. So they're looking at all these things and saying, you know, oh, great, there are these tools we can go and use as products and make money with them and so on and so forth. And all the way, we have this idea of what's really going on with the signal that we originally got and the computer and Andromeda. Dr. Fleming, although he initially, his role was to decode the signal and work with building the computer, he becomes a character whose role is to question the intentions of the computer and the wisdom of using it and not knowing more about it and allowing it to continue to exist.
Yeah, as you say, it's Fleming who really is the one who's questioning everything that's going on, and he's the sort of human moral at the center of this hard science story, with these fascinating ideas and this examination of science and examination of science interacting with military and commercial goals. So we should talk a little bit about the production of A for Andromeda. And one of the most interesting things about it is its main author, the chap who came up with the idea, who was Fred Hoyle, later Sir Fred Hoyle, who was a very famous astronomer and astrophysicist, perhaps most famous for coining the term Big Bang for the theory of the sort of origin of the universe. And we've also mentioned him very briefly in the past on British Invaders because his son, Geoffrey Hoyle, went on to be the scientific advisor on Timeslip, which we discussed in the past.
That's right, another scientist in the family.
Yeah, absolutely. And another scientist with an interest in British science fiction, because Fred Hoyle was, as well as being a very renowned scientist himself, was also interested in science fiction. And he'd written a couple of science fiction novels already, one called The Black Cloud in 1957 and another novel called Ossian's Ride in 1958. And I gather that Ossian's Ride has a slightly similar theme to A for Andromeda. And I think it was the novels that led a contact from the BBC getting in touch with him to talk about the possibility of him writing a series for the BBC. A designer called Norman James put Fred Hoyle in touch with the writer John Elliott, and they worked together to come up with the story of A for Andromeda, which we're discussing.
Fred Hoyle was, in addition to being an astronomer and a novelist, as we described, he was very big on being a communicator for science. He was involved in science journalism and explaining science on TV and radio and so on for many, many years, in fact, decades. And his influence on A for Andromeda is what made it this strong, hard science fiction story that is about the science and the process of building things and going through the steps from the message through the creation of the computer and the life form and so on and so forth. That is what gave you something that was such an interesting piece of science fiction drama. The director of A for Andromeda was Michael Hayes, who would go on to direct City of Death on Doctor Who many years later. And he was heavily involved with the process of having things fit together and having things written and so on. He was the co-producer along with Norman James, the designer. So you had this group of about three or four people, Fred Hoyle, John Elliott, Michael Hayes, and to an extent Norman James, who worked through these things and put this series together, more or less from end to end. It was filmed in London at Ealing Studios, and also some of it was filmed at the IBM offices in London in order to get this very modern, even futuristic look of having lots of computers. At the time, these were large boxes with spinning tapes on them and so on. And they also did some location filming at an army base in Wales, which gave you some of the aspect of the secrecy when this project is taken and done in a very secret, out-of-the-way place.
And then they had some problems, I think, with the timing of the episodes, Brian.
That's right.
I think the writers had written something that was going to last about 40 minutes or so, and the producers wanted to cut it down to a 30-minute slot, so there was some compression going on. And then I think they were given a 45-minute slot for each episode, so then they had to pad it back out again, which I think produced a few problems, and in particular led them to add on this sort of framing device at the start of the episodes, where they had Professor Reinhardt supposedly describing the events of A for Andromeda in a television interview that had happened, or that was supposed to have happened, a few years after the events portrayed in the series. On the surviving bits and pieces, we can see telesnaps of this TV studio with Reinhardt giving these interviews, although I don't think the audio survives for any of them, Brian.
Right, and the framing device with Reinhardt is the one part of episode 6 that is in fact missing. We have the rest of episode 6. I believe what happened was the original scripts by Fred Hoyle and John Elliott were supposed to be for 30-minute episodes, but in fact they were a little bit long, and some of the material in it was so good that Michael Hayes, producing and directing, didn't want to cut those down, so he arranged to have 45-minute episodes rather than 30-minute episodes. Probably those scripts were, as you say, really best for something somewhere in between 30 and 45 minutes. So it is a little bit padded in a way, but does work very well.
Oh, okay. That's, as you say, that probably explains what happens with the odd timings.
That's right. So, on our next episode, we will talk about a bunch of other things related to A for Andromeda, including the Andromeda Breakthrough, the 1962 sequel.
We're also going to be talking about several of the remakes, because there's been quite a few remakes of A for Andromeda. We're going to get on to talk about the availability of it and how you can to watch this series. And of course, we'll get on to our thoughts and reflections and our own opinions on the show. And we'll perhaps also briefly touch on another piece of science fiction that you may think this sounds similar to, which was the film Contact by another astrophysicist, Carl Sagan. But we'll come to that in the next episode.
Yes, we definitely have a lot to talk about next time. You can reach us at BritishInvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us at www.BritishInvaders.com. We have a Facebook group, so if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find us there.
And as an added bonus for our Facebook group members, you can now find details of our coming shows 3 months in advance. You can find out our schedule of what we're going to be covering over the next 3 months. So there's an advantage to checking out the Facebook group.
Yes, advance notice of what we're covering. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
And please join us next time. Until then, this is Eamon from England saying goodbye.